As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the great teachers, the great masters' doctrine. This is his teaching to save all of mankind, every being, every soul, from the misery of suffering. Path that did not exist until the advent of the Buddha. Before we commence today's sermon, let us therefore take a moment to reflect on how fortunate we are to be students of the great master, to be his disciples. Let us remind ourselves of the gift that we have received and how precious it is, and how in every waking moment we must consider it our duty, our responsibility to ourselves, let alone anyone else, to practice the path, to fulfill it, and to achieve the goal that he expected of all of us, which is nothing other than our own liberation. Reminding ourselves of his greatness, his infinite mercy, his infinite compassion, his infinite virtue. Let us take a moment to recite the stanzas that were once uttered when asked the question of one of his disciples, "Who is your teacher and whose disciple are you?" With honor, pride, dignity, and great respect, let us be upstanding to recite these stanzas before we continue with today's proceedings. Dhirasya vigata mohasya pabhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya Susamachittasya buddhasilasya sadhupanyasya vesantarasya vimalasya bhagavatotasya savakohamasmi akatankatissa tusitasya vantalokamisasya muditasya katasamanasya manujasya antimasarirasya narasya anupamasya virajasya bhagavatotasya savakohamasmi asansayasya kulasya venaikasya sarativarasya anuttarasya ruchiradhammasya nikhankasya abhasakarasya manachidasya virasya bhagavatotasya savakohamasmi nisabhasya appameyasya gambhirasya munapattasya khemankarasya vedasya dhammattasya sanguttattasya sangatigasya muttasya bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi nagassa pantasenassa khina sanyojanassa muttassa patimantakassa dhonassa pannadhajassa vitaragassa dantasya nippa panchasya Bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi. Isi sattamasa akuhasa devijasa brahmapattasa nahatakasa padakasa pasadhasa viditavedasa purindadasa sakkasa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi. Isi sattamasa akuhasa devijasa brahmapattasa nahatakasa padakasa pasadhasa viditavedasa purindadasa sakkasa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Let us now take a moment to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, observe the precepts, and continue with the rest of the proceedings. Please repeat all together and after me.
Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Saranagamanam sampunnam. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjatama dakthana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Tisaranena saddhin pancha silang dhammam sadukham surakhitam katnva apamadena sampadeta.
Okay, you may all now be seated. Let us also take a moment to invite the countless beings who reside in the countless world systems out there, who are all looking for refuge, looking for a way out of suffering, but lost and despair, in despair as they have not yet come across the Buddha's teaching, Let us remind ourselves that among them will be mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, husbands and wives of ours, beings who will have been very close to us in this long journey in samsara, who will have committed themselves wholly towards our comfort and our well-being. Therefore, we must remind ourselves that we have a duty and an obligation towards them. When they were with us, they gave us everything that they could afford. Whatever they found, the best of which, they passed that on to us. Today, we must return that favor. Whatever we find, the best of which, we must return to them. We must pass on to them. And what better gift is there than the gift of them? Therefore, let us all take a moment to invite them to join us, to witness this meritorious deed, as among them may be those who are lacking in merits, and as a result of which are yet in the woeful plane. May they witness this meritorious deed and rejoice in the merits, and may those merits help them to redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. Once in the blissful plane, they will then be able to listen to the teaching and understand it, and may they do just that. Understand the sermon, comprehend the Dhamma, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. As I now make this invitation out to all of them, I ask you to join me in extending that invite in your hearts and in your minds, with compassion emanating from the bottom of your hearts, with a sense of duty, a sense of obligation. Invite them to join us, to witness this meritorious deed, to rejoice in these merits, to listen to the sermon, to understand it, to comprehend it, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana.
Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajasa sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta.
Also, before we begin, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves that although today we may find ourselves in noble companionship, we may think of ourselves as very kind, gentle, and good-hearted people, we have not always been like this. Had we been like this always, we would not be here today. In our long journey in samsara, having fallen into the association of ignoble, immoral people, our minds were defiled with desire, aversion, and delusion. Having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, we would have committed the most heinous of sins, including reviling, desecrating, insulting, and offending the noble ones, the Sammasambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, Arahatta Buddhas, Anagami, Sakrudagami, Sotapannas. Let us take a moment to seek forgiveness from these noble ones for the very virtues that we once insulted, that we once desecrated. Today, we are on a journey seeking them and on an exercise to instill them within our minds. But that which we once shunned today escapes us, and it may be because of those actions. So, let us gather up humility and humbleness within our minds and our hearts. Let us take a moment to acknowledge that we have indeed committed these errors, because it is only with that humility, with that humbleness, can you really and truthfully seek that forgiveness. Once that is done, let us take a moment to seek their forgiveness. From the noble ones, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddhas, ministries, the Sambuddha Shasana, for any thoughts, words, or actions of revile and desecration, slander or insult, or offense directed towards them, may I be forgiven. And as you take a moment to do so, let me remind you to make a solemn oath, to make a promise to yourself, to never conduct yourself in that manner ever again. And finally, I invite you to take a moment to remind yourself of a meritorious deed that sticks in your mind, one that you recall very fondly, that and many other meritorious deeds that you would have committed up until this point in your whole journey in samsara. May by the power of those merits, you be able to comprehend the Four Noble Truths. Listen to this sermon and understand it and comprehend the Dhamma, and be able to attain the state of Sotapanna, stream enterer, and embark on the journey to end all journeys once and for all. And for any among you who may have already achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages, and may we all attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. With that resolve in mind, I invite you all to prepare yourselves now to listen to this sermon. Okay. If you listened attentively, if you were listening attentively, today I asked you to recall a meritorious deed before you start listening to the sermon. Why is that? What effect does it have on what we are trying to do here? Does it have any value? Is there meaning to it? If you understand the value of it, someday, henceforth, no matter what task you embark yourself on, you will make it a habit to remind yourself of a meritorious deed. If you understand the significance of it and why and how much it can affect you and help thrust you forward, when it is something positive that you want to engage in and you're looking for positive results in and out of your life, there's meaning to all of this. There's a reason for everything. There's a universal law that says like attracts like. Similar things attract each other. Similar things are always drawn to each other. Birds of a feather, you know the rest of it. In a self-created world of delusion, people believe that it is they who are deserving of success, of victory, and it is they themselves who have been able to make those achievements. They take that as a personal achievement. So what room is there for merits then? With that sort of philosophy, as Buddhists, we strongly believe we have accepted merits as an integral part of our journey, that it is very important, it is fundamental, not just to well-being in our existence in the 31 world systems, but also on our path to Nibbana. The Buddha, on countless occasions, has reminded his monks as well as others to engage in merits as much as possible and to do it wholeheartedly. This must bring a question in your mind, into your mind. If it is I who, through my own effort, am able to achieve results, get the things I want, be whoever I want to be, then what is the role of merits? Why does the Buddha talk about merits so much? Why is it every second book you pick up on Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist doctrine, Buddhist teachings, you're sure to find the word merits? And you're sure to find advice to engage in merits. What is the role of merits in a world in which we have been taught that it is one's own actions, it's one's own effort that brings results, where we have been taught to take pride in our results, where when you pass an exam, you're given a pat on the back and said, well done. Of course, we knew you were going to pass. You worked hard. Where when you climb Mount Everest, people praise you. And they give you credit for that. So what is the role of merits then? Where if you end up being born into a rich family and inherit a large amount of wealth, people seem to struggle to attribute credit. But when a man works hard, if he starts off in poverty, but works hard, toils all day long, and eventually earns a small fortune, then people say that was all his doing. So it seems you need merits to be born into a rich family, but to become rich, there's no place, there's no room for merits. That wasn't merits that did that. It was all hard work and labor. Can that be the case? Does that seem reasonable? If it is, then in what sort of cases do you attribute success to merits? And in what cases would you attribute success to sheer luck? Is merit and luck one and the same? But then you see some people, all day long, they engage in meritorious deeds. But luck never seems to take their side. Lady Luck seems to always abandon them. Always seems to ignore them. And then there are others. Sometimes they live a vicious life, getting up to all sorts of mischief. But whenever they want something, all they have to do is ask for it, and voila, it's there. So what's that? These are concepts that people grapple with all day long, and these are sometimes issues that people put in between themselves and taking up, at least to consider, Buddhist philosophy. They're shooting themselves in the foot, I must add. Pity. One of the biggest mistakes I have seen people do is whenever they are presented with a case, an explanation for something, or a certain situation, they try to make sense of it on their own, by themselves. And if that doesn't work, then that's it. They've already come to a conclusion. Take, for instance, the case of rebirth. One might say, one might hear one day, in a sermon, in a lecture, in a talk, Once you die, you will be reborn. And depending on the power of your merits or demerits, where you'll be reborn will be determined. And once you're reborn, the life that you're going to have to live will be determined. This man who listens to this will try and make sense of it, using whatever knowledge is available to him, using whatever experience is available to him. In this small world of knowledge that he considers himself to be a master, he will process this new information, and out of that will come a conclusion, whether this is true or this is false. And usually there's seldom you find someone who you see is undecided on anything. They're usually pretty much decided. Either it's true or it's false. You must understand the reason for that being, when you don't have an answer to that, answer to something, when there's a question that lingers in the back of your mind without a solid answer, that is a point of vexation for most people. So therefore, they don't like when things are undecided. So is there rebirth or isn't there rebirth? 99% of all of you will already have an answer. 1% might say, I'm not sure, Swaminathan. I really am not. And I'm not decided either way. Only 1% of you can honestly say that. 99% of you will say, yeah, it's there. Or no, it's not there. Because that middle ground that I'm still considering the facts, that I'm not sure, maybe, maybe not, that is very unsettling for most people, because it is an open question. An open question is most of the time an open vexation. That is sometimes because of, partly due to curiosity. Curiosity is a difficult beast to tame, a very difficult one. So, coming back to merits then. Is there such a thing called merits? Is there such a thing as the power of merits? Is there such a thing as, if you do good, then you will be rewarded with good. If you do bad, you will be rewarded with bad. Or you'll be penalized with bad. I'm telling you folks, 99% of you will already have an answer. Wouldn't you agree? Some of you will be in full agreement. Others will be in vehement disagreement. And there will be no room for doubt there. Oh, I'm sure that there's no, it means nothing. 1% will be, I'm not sure. So I can't really say yes or no to that. That 99% that came out with an answer to that question would have at some point considered some of the things that I'd mentioned above, such as, what is the role of merits? If it's a man and it's his hard work, his labor, his toil that brought him the results that he seems to enjoy today, then what is the role of merits? Some of you will be skeptics. And that's fine. You don't have to be decided one way or the other. You don't even have to be middle ground. You don't have to be anything really. But always keeping an open mind will usually in life leave us with better odds than not. Always try and have an open mind towards anything really. In other words, being fixed up with your ideas can not only sometimes but most times be to your disadvantage. If you're always willing to listen, willing to consider, willing to reevaluate your options, willing to re-examine the situation and draw up new conclusions, willing to listen to other people's ideas, not necessarily be influenced by them, but at least willing to listen, willing to consider, then a lot more of life's rewards will come your way. So why did I ask you then, at the start of the sermon, to remind yourself of a meritorious deed that you committed recently? And why do I recommend you do that all the time, every time? You're about to engage in something important, something critical, something that has the potential to add great value to your life. It could be something worldly, such as sitting an exam paper, or pulling out your car onto the street, out of the garage, from the driveway, or turning the ignition. Anything, absolutely anything. Climbing up a tree. Setting out from home to get to work. Getting on the bus. Getting out of the bus. Even something as simple and so mundane as having your meal. Having lunch. Heck, I would recommend, if you could, to have a meritorious deed in mind with every mouthful of rice you take, with every mouthful of food you take. With every step you take, with every ladder you climb up or down. Particularly any time you are putting yourself into some risky situation. Have in mind a meritorious deed as you set out from home. This will become easier if you are someone who always engages in meritorious deeds, and they don't have to be grand scale. Little things. Closing an open tap that's dripping water. Is that not a meritorious deed? It is not only the construction of stupas and Buddha statues, or offering alms to 100 members of the Sangha. They're not restricted to that. Simple things, little things. More frequently, more often. Sometimes we are blind to all the opportunities that pass us. You know, if only you kept an open mind and looked for these opportunities, you will spot them. On a daily basis, I would like to argue that you only engage in 1% of all the possible meritorious deeds that you could have if you remained alert. Had you remained alert? Had you remained vigilant? Had you remained aware of what's going on around you? On an average day, you only commit 1% of all the meritorious opportunities. 99% you miss. That is by no way an understatement. Excuse me. If you look at things with a fresh perspective, a new pair of lenses, you will start to see what I mean, folks. Simple things. It could be a bit of paper on the floor. How many people will pass that without picking it up and throwing it in the bin? But how many people pass that? And they see it and they think to themselves, ah, it's ugly, isn't it, that? I wonder who put it there. I wonder why no one picks it up and put it in the bin. How many people do you think will pass that and think that to themselves? They'll think to themselves, how many people? Oh, they'll think to themselves, I wonder why no one picks that up and puts it in the bin. They'll think to themselves. And they'll pass it by. Sometimes it's just a rusty nail on the ground. How many people will pass that by? And they'll just think to themselves, these people, why aren't they careful when they do their work? Someone must have done some work here and look what they've done. They've left their dirt for someone else to pick up. What a mess. Don't they realize it's a sin to do this? They'll think to themselves and then they'll walk right past by. Sometimes it's a dirty cup that just needs a quick rinse. You know, at the workplace, for instance, if you walk up to the sink, you've just had your lunch, you've maybe had your tea, you walk up to the sink, and there are a few more cups lying around the sink. What do you normally do? Do you wash them? Or do you tell yourself, look at these people. Can't they even just wash their cups? Can't they wash their dishes? Why do they just come and leave it here? That's what they'll think. A dripping tap? You'll walk past by and think, why can't they just close the tap properly? Look, it's wasting water. These people. And they'll walk right past by. Sometimes it's just some water that's spilt, maybe on a surface, maybe it's on a table somewhere. And there's a box of tissues right by. One tissue, one swipe, and job done. There's even a bin right next to it. 99% of people will walk past by thinking to themselves, why can't anyone just wipe that table clean? There's tissue, there's a bin, only takes a couple of seconds. Oh, these people, what are they like? And they'll walk just past by, right by. Have you seen people like that? Do you know people like that? Do you know someone like that? You don't? Sure? Sometimes maybe the floor is just a bit dirty. And there's a broom. Leaned up against the wall. All it takes is just picking up the broom and two sweeps left, two sweeps right, and two sweeps out. A few sweeps, and the floor is clean again. But how many people will walk past that? Walked right past by, thinking to themselves, God, there's a broom there. Why don't anyone just pick it up and sweep the blooming floor? It's not going to take very long. See, it's dirty. Now even I have got dirt on my feet. Why can't someone just clean the floor and keep it tidy? For heaven's sake. That's a very familiar sound effect, isn't it? You heard that before? You haven't? Sure, you must have. Try it sometime. Just to get the hang of it. It's very easy. You just have to bring your jaws together and just like that. Some people know it very well, how to do it. They've mastered it. Some people are still learning. Some people, when they spend a few years with people who are like that, will become masters of the art. One day I was thinking to myself, I wonder what happens to people like that. You know, people who make that noise. But particularly when there's something that they could have done about the situation, but all they know is just to show their dissatisfaction at the situation. And then as I was thinking of this, I was actually in the kuti, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder what happens to people who make that noise. That noise. And then I got the answer. Just like that. I heard a lizard, a gecko, on the wall. A gecko on the wall answered my question. What happens to people who do? And the gecko answered, there are plenty of meritorious deeds. If you just looked around you, you could very easily spot a few. Actually, just where you are right now, scan the room you're in right now. See if you can spot a few meritorious deeds. I'm telling you, you can find at least 10. No? I'll give you a couple of minutes. See if you can find 10 meritorious deeds that all along, all up until this point, you just passed by. You just thought to yourself, why doesn't anyone do something about this? Why doesn't someone fix this tap? Why doesn't someone fix this bulb? Why doesn't someone pick up this litter, for heaven's sake? You know, it's been there like that for ages now. This bit of dirt on the floor, right? All it takes is just someone to pick up a tissue paper, get it wet and maybe just mop it a bit. Or, you know, just pick up the mop and just give it a quick mop and that's all it takes. Why can't someone just do that? An empty cup that needs to be returned to the cup holder. A dirty dish, a dirty plate that needs washing. An open cupboard that just needs the door to be shut. Or maybe a broom that's just fallen. It just needs someone to pick it up and set it back upright. How long does that take? Maybe some washed clothes, they just need folding. Maybe there's some clothes on the clothesline, they're dry. They just need to be taken off the clothesline. How many meritorious deeds have you walked right past by? The other day someone told me that someone had recently spotted a man in India. Apparently this gentleman, he travels around the country with bags full of soil and perhaps various other bits and bobs. He walks around the country covering up potholes on the roads. And he does it with a passion. I think when questioned, he said, I can either wait until someone does it, or I can do it myself. You know, in a world where you have people like that, they are very hard to find, I admit. I can give you 100 people who, as they walk around the road, they will step on a pebble or a sharp stone. And it's so sharp that it might even hurt their foot. And they won't even bother kicking that bit of stone off of the road, they'll just go and walk right past by. And they'll probably say, can't someone just clean the road? Now, people are walking up and down this all day long. Why can't someone just clean the road? How many people do you think, if they saw a leaking pipe walking along the road, might they, for instance, ring up the emergency services or someone in authority and inform them of it? How many people do you think might do that? Or perhaps if there's a light bulb that's on throughout the day, the switch is broken. It's on a lamppost, street lighting, but the switch is broken. When it used to work, someone would come and switch it on and off. But now the switch is broken and it's on all day long. How many people do you think might do something about it? Not go and replace the switch, that's what I'm talking about. Maybe contact the authorities, someone in the right place, in the right position, and inform them. These are all opportunities for merits that people walk right past by. If you are just a little bit more observant, folks, I tell you, you will find ample opportunities like this. Right beside you, right in front of you, right behind you, all around you. Ample opportunities to earn merits. I'll explain to you why it is so important to have all these merits in your merit account. But first, I want you to be more observant to these opportunities. I'm not saying put everything else you have on your timetables, on your schedules aside, and go and fix all of the world's problems. Or go and replace all the burnt light bulbs. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying if an opportunity presents itself to you, and it's only going to take you a fraction of a second, a fraction of a minute, maybe a couple of seconds, maybe half a minute to do it, and it's not going to delay you, then why miss the opportunity? Because most of the time, don't you get somewhere and, you know, when you're waiting for an appointment, for instance, you just get there and you just start reading a magazine while you wait for your appointment. You will watch the television while you wait for your appointment. You will sit down and watch the television while you wait for someone's call. And there are so many things that you could have done in that time. Remember, time is the most precious thing you have. But it is only rewarding if you invest it correctly. You have to invest your time. That's when it starts to yield rewards. I'm saying, if you are a little bit more observant, just try it, you know, try this out for a week or so. You'll be surprised at how many opportunities you walked right past by. And how many opportunities you walked past by and you thought to yourself, why can't just someone do something about this? If this mindset is to change, or if this mindset were to change, you'd reach your goals, you'd get to where you want to be much faster. Because what is the mentality with the attitude? Where lies the error? Where is the mistake? Who's the mistake with? Inside or outside? With the blame others attitude, how far do you think you can get? Let's say you're at the bus halt, you're waiting for a bus, and there's a bit of litter on the floor. Maybe it's just a bit of paper, a bit of cardboard, maybe it's a box from a burger. And there's a bin just a few yards away from the halt. A litter bin. It's very easy, isn't it, to complain about that and say, see, that, you know, whoever ate that, why did they just dump it on the floor? Why couldn't they have just gone and put it in that bin over there? Yeah, that one over there. It's not even that far. See, they could have just picked that up and they could, instead of dropping it on the floor, they could have just walked a few yards and dropped it into the bin, right? Look at where they put it. What's with these people? And you wait for the bus. ninety-nine percent of people will do this. There'll be that 1% who will think to themselves, aha, opportunity. I found an opportunity for merit. Without any invitation, they'll walk up to it, pick it up, walk up to the bin, drop it into the bin, and then they'll be very happy about it. Sometimes onlookers will go, ooh. Yeah, that can be the response sometimes. Those are the kind of people who don't even have the merits to rejoice in a meritorious deed. They didn't even have to get their hands dirty. All they had to think to themselves was, what a great deed that man did. Something that I couldn't do, he managed to do. Wow. They didn't even have the merit to do that. They didn't even have the intelligence to do that. The brain power to do that. What did they do instead? They went, ew. Yuck. What did he just do? He just picked up that litter off the floor and he went and put it in the bin. Yuck. And sometimes if this person who is making this comment or is criticizing this is with their kid, they'll go, Buddha, don't you be like that. Look at that man's hands, khaki he has on his hands. See that uncle, his hands are, he's got khaki on his hands, Buddha. Don't you ever be like that. You have to be hygienic. They don't even have the brain power to rejoice in a meritorious deed. Because it's not every day you get an opportunity to perform a grand meritorious deed. But do remember, you don't win a game of cricket simply with the sixes and fours that you've played. What wins the game are the ones and twos that you picked up along the way. What proportion of a team score do you think are the sixes and fours? What proportion of a team score do you think, on average, are the ones and twos that they have scored? So what do you think got them the victory? In much the same way, folks, your victories, and remember, the thing is, with merits, right, it's not in the action. We talked about this some weeks ago. It's not in the action, it's not in the thing that you do. It's the how you feel about it. Isn't it? Sometimes building a stupa, a pagoda, and offering it to a local temple, in comparison to picking up that bit of litter off the ground and going and dropping it into the bin, sometimes it may be that the latter earns you more merit than the former. Why? Because of your perspective, because of the way you approached it, because of the joy that was in your mind, in your heart, because of the humbleness that you had in your mind at that moment in time. Because there was no one to praise you, no one to get earn your brownie points off of, no one to give you a pat on the back, people around you went, you, but that didn't bother you. You did what was right. I'm saying there'll be plenty of opportunities like that that you'll just walk right past by. If you are a little bit more observant, you'll spot them. Be that kind of person. Because all these merits are very important. And you see, so when I ask you to think of a merit that you performed right before the start of a sermon, you should have no trouble with reminding yourself of one. Because you'll have so many in your account that a withdrawal or a recollection of a meritorious deed takes no effort at all. Whereas if you have to think for a moment and say, Swaminathan, the meritorious deed I did recently, can I tell you next Sunday? That's a week, that's for next sermon. Now at our monastery, our monks have got into the habit of that. Our anagarikas included. For instance, if they ever see an empty water bottle, all you have to do is look this way and then look back at it and it's full. Sometimes we don't know how we got all that water into it. It's miracles are performed at this monastery. Empty bottles get filled up at the count of 10. Who did it? No one knows. When did it happen? Can't tell really. There's just the result. I do sometimes feel we are haunted. Maybe there are ghosts around. Maybe. I don't know. Because sometimes, you know, I sit down for meditation, close my eyes, open my eyes, and the bottle is full. Don't know how that happens. Sometimes there's no one around. That's the scariest bit. I'm saying at home even you can do that. Let's say for instance that you have a cool water bottle in your refrigerator. Right? Why is it that when you walk up to the refrigerator and you see that the water bottle is almost empty, right? Usually, I'll tell you what most people do. 99% of people, they'll think to themselves, can't be bothered. I don't want cold water. Don't feel like it anyway. And they change mind. Why? Because if they drink that last bit, now who's going to fill the thing up? Tell me, is that foolish or is that foolish? Which one do you think it is? You want to go 50-50? Sugar comes in a bag, and then what mother does is she puts that sugar into a container, right? So you walk up to you want to make some tea, and you look in the container, right? It's time to fill it up. 99% of people will at that point all of a sudden decide, I don't feel like tea really. Maybe for a change today, I'll drink tea without sugar. It's amazing how reluctant they are to engage in a simple meritorious deed. But they don't realize how much meritorious power there is in that. I'm saying just within your household, folks, if you just walk around the house, you'll find ample opportunity. I'm sure you'll find a desk somewhere, a table somewhere that has not been wiped in 100 years. You'll see cobwebs sometimes around the house, never been cleaned up for a million years. Just walk around and have a look. Particularly the children, right? Make yourself useful at home. Even in the bathroom. Right? I'm sure if I were to find people, I could find people who would walk up to the bathroom and now they just want to brush their teeth, right? And now the toothpaste is just the last bit of the toothpaste. Right? If you just one more squeeze out of it and you're going to run out of toothpaste, what do you think they're going to do? One night without brushing isn't going to do all that harm. They'd rather not brush than actually go and refill the toothpaste. They know where the toothpaste is. It's in the cupboard. Maybe in the kitchen. And all you got to do is walk out, go back into the kitchen, open the cupboard, get out that tube, put the box in the bin and bring it and put it back in the bathroom. But oh no, can't be bothered. These are all meritorious deeds. That's what I'm saying. If you are just a little bit more observant, you will realize that 99% of all the meritorious deeds you could have done throughout the course of a day, you have just walked past by. Don't be like that. How many bins have you walked past? It's full. Full to the brim. It's time to empty it. And it smells. Stinks. If it's a kitchen bin, the whole kitchen stinks. But when you're in the kitchen and you see that, all you want to do now is you want to get out of the kitchen before someone else spots you in the kitchen. Why? Because if someone else walks into the kitchen, they're going to expect you to empty it. They'll want you to empty it, you'll want them to empty it, and then they'll want you to empty it, and you'll want them to empty it. Right? Now it's a battle for who empties the bin. So rather than get yourself into that uncomfortable situation, walk out of the kitchen as soon as you possibly can. And then get someone else to walk in there first, and then you go in afterwards. Because, you know, they found it, right? They had better clear it up, right? I'm not surprised if these things happen in people's homes. Don't let that be your home. If you see a bin that needs emptying, be the person who puts yourself forward. Not the person who thinks to yourself, why doesn't someone just empty the bin? Don't think you have to come to the temple to earn merits. Don't have to. Don't think just because it's Corona, there's nothing you can do now to earn your merits. Just because you can't step outside your house. All you got to do is get yourself a bit of pen and paper, right? And a notepad of some sort, and walk around the house and just jot down things you could have done, but you always saw, you always spotted them, but you either ignored them or you thought to yourself, and you walk right past by. Especially the kids. Listen to these sermons. Children in the house. That if you are not of an age yet to start earning for the family, right? Your mother may be busy. She's far too busy to attend to everything. And your father may be far too busy to attend to everything. But you can. Why can't you? Why can't you mop the floor? You don't have to make it a habit to mop the floor. Just once. Do it once and see the magic of taking action. I mean, you know, at least you can live holding your head up high with pride and dignity that you've contributed something to the family. So there are lots of opportunities, I promise you. All you have to do is be observant and look closely enough. Be attentive, be alert, and you will spot them. You know, sometimes I have seen, in my old life, many a time, you know, when you walk into the temple, right, people are so keen on offering flowers. But seldom do people think of it as a meritorious deed to clean the altar, to clear it up, to remove the old flowers and throw it away. And just clear the place up. People are not keen on doing such things. They walk right past by. And you know what, they'll think to themselves, why doesn't just someone clean this place? You know, I have brought flowers and there's nowhere to even put them. All these old flowers, you know, why can't they just hire someone to clean this place up? You know, if you walk into a religious establishment like a temple or a kovil or a mosque or whatever, right? Chances are you see litter all over the place. Depending on, you know, country, I suppose, but in some countries it's forbidden, but in other countries you will be able to see them. Like sometimes it may be old boxes of joss sticks, maybe the polythene cases of the wicks, the candle wicks, or the oil lamp wicks. Maybe it's the flowers that are withered away that needs to be chucked away. Maybe they are old shopping bags. Do you think that doesn't earn you any merits? While everyone in your pilgrimage, right, go and do their prayers, if you're not, you know, some people, they're not so keen on prayers, but what could you do? You could walk around the precinct, picking up all the litter, and put them in the bin. Some people will look at that and go, "Ew." You just need to think to yourself, what a pity. They don't even realize, they don't have, without getting their hands dirty, they could have just said sadhu, 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 and earned some merits. But what have they done? It's a shame. I mean, you know, there are so many opportunities out there. Because at the end of the day, folks, you know, we need all those merits. And I'm saying, when are you going to earn your merits? Because you have to invest time to earn merits. What are people thinking on? When do you think people are going to be investing that time? You got to do it now, here and now. When the opportunity arises, that's when you got to do it. Because it's not like, you know, when you're 75, you think to yourself, "Ooh, you know, I better earn some merits now." And, you know, you're going to struggle to walk around the town looking for litter, to pick up the litter and go and throw it in the bin at the age 75. You know, it's going to be difficult. And you can't make up for lost time that way. Because once time is gone, time's gone. You can't get that back. So I'm saying, you don't have to then all of a sudden think, "Oh, I better earn myself some merits." That's what most people do. They'll live their life, just a very ordinary life, right? And then by the time they reach old age, usually above 60, they'll think to themselves, "You know what? We better start earning ourselves some merits." And then they'll have to put time aside from the remainder of their life, maybe the next 5 years, 10 years, into doing merits. But remember, 60 years of their life, they had ample opportunity to earn merits, those ones and twos along the way. Not all of the merits that they do now, from 60 to 65, can sum up to give more meritorious power than the merits they would have earned had they done merits along the way. All their life up to the age of 60. Because those ones and twos are what brings you victory. Not always the sixes and the fours. So be mindful of that. Sometimes you lose focus. It can happen, right? For instance, if you're taking alms to the temple, right? Maybe that will be the only thing that is in your sight. And then you'll lose focus about all the things that are happening around you. Perhaps at the temple, there's an open tap that no one's closed. Because you're so focused on offering alms, serving that meal into the alms bowl, offering the monks with some water, you'll immediately miss the open tap that you could have closed and earn yourself some merits. Sometimes it may be some litter that you see in the temple premises. But you are so focused on the deed that you want to do, that is, make an offering, the alms offering, that you seem to neglect. But that is a lost opportunity. Sometimes it may be that you earn more merits by actually walking up to that bit of litter, picking it up, going and finding a bin and dropping in it, than the merits you could have earned, or than the merits you are to earn by making that offering of food. It is possible, because remember, it's not in the action. It's in the intention. It's in the state of mind that is in play when you're engaged in that meritorious deed. I'm saying this out to you because it's something that I try and do as much as I possibly can. Pick up the wants and the tools along the way. And at our monastery, that has become a habit for our monks, for our anagarikas. They don't always have to wait for the grand Buddha pujas. They don't have to wait for the Katina Pinkam. They don't have to wait for the ordination ceremonies. As they walk along the road, if they see a rusty nail, that will get picked up and it will get binned. A bit of litter on the floor, maybe a pebble, maybe a stone that they stepped on, and it pricked them and it hurt. They don't want that to happen to anyone else. Sometimes that will prompt them to go and get themselves a broom, and then they'll come and sweep the entire road. So you can do that at home, starting from the home. And when you start at home, you can then expand that into other places, in the workplace, on the bus, on the train. Do your little bit. You don't need anyone to observe you. You don't need anyone to give you a pat on the back, right? You don't need anyone to praise you, do you? What do you do merits for? For praise? And then resolve to yourself, may by the power of these merits, I be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. That's all you need to pray for. And you see, the other good thing is, if you get into the habit of doing as many of them through the day, through the course of the day, on each occasion you're thinking to yourself, may by the power of these merits I be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So you see, that thought in itself runs through your mind. As many times as you do the meritorious deeds throughout the course of the day. So if at least you increase the number of meritorious deeds that you or potential meritorious deeds by 1%, then you're thinking to yourself, may I attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, twice as many times as you do today, on a daily basis. If you increase that to 10%, you're doing it 10 times as many times as you do today. Then that becomes your meditation. That becomes your karmasthan. May I attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Because remember, what you're doing is a meritorious deed. It is putting metta into action. Because through your action, many people who could have been hurt or inconvenienced or put into a state of discomfort, you have now been able to save them from falling into that plight. So that's something to bear in mind. Make that a habit, starting today. You know, you can make it a, you know, you can even find times in the day where you discipline yourself, or you make it a habit to do some meritorious deed. Like, for example, say, before you go to bed, right? I resolve to do one meritorious deed before I go to bed. Just quickly walk around the house, see what you can find. Maybe there's a broom that's fallen. Pick it up, put it up straight. Maybe there's a tap that hasn't been closed properly. Close it. You can make savings along the way, but that's the bonus. What we are hoping for here is merits. Maybe the kitchen needs a quick sweep. Do that before you go to bed. Maybe there are some clothes that just got taken off the clothesline. Maybe you can fold them. If they're folded, maybe you can return them to their rightful owners. And for children, you know, you can start picking up some duties, some chores in the household. If your dad wears shoes to work, black shoes, then why don't one of you? If you are two brothers, then why don't one of you take it upon yourself as your duty to polish his shoes for him? Make that your duty. Tell your father, Dad, from now on, I'll polish your shoes. Don't you worry. I'll make sure that they're ready for you in the morning. Another one could pick his tie for him. If your dad had to spend time picking a tie, then you can pick his tie for him. Makes life easier on him. That's one less thing he has to think about. He's already put all his thinking time into you and your everyone in your family. If you can lighten the burden for him with just one decision he has to make, you can choose his socks. Get them out of the sock cupboard or the sock drawer and put it out on the bed. By the shoes that your brother polished for him last night. And it's the rainy season over here in Sri Lanka, right? If one of you could make sure that your mother's umbrella is always dry for her before when she wants to take it to work the following morning, so that she can put it in her bag. Take it up as a responsibility. Then she doesn't need to worry about it. One less thing for her to worry about. See, these are little things. These are not big things. They're little things. But they're big all the same. You can take responsibility of making sure that in the household or in the kitchen, in the pantry, all the containers, they'll always have the right amount of spice in them, or sugar, or salt, or whatever. One of you can make it your responsibility to make the shopping list, prepare the shopping list. One of you can take the responsibility to clean the fridge. Amma, every 3 weeks, I'll clean the fridge for you. You don't have to worry about it. The day before I clean the fridge, I'll let you know. Just in case she hasn't got plans for putting something in there that has to be in the fridge. Or it might end up spoiling something that she wants to make. So you can let her know a day before. Amma, tomorrow I'm going to clean the fridge, just letting you know. And do it. You think that's not meritorious? That's one less thing she has to do. One of you can always clean the dining table. One of you can make it your responsibility to put the chairs back in under the dining table. To wash the napkins. To sweep the veranda. That's it. I don't sweep the whole house, I'll sweep the veranda. Fine. I'll hoover all the carpets at home. I'll get rid of the cobwebs. Take that upon yourself as a duty. Every little helps. And each and every one of those things is a meritorious deed. That's what I'm saying, folks. If you just open up your horizons, if you just look outside of your usual thinking patterns, you start to see opportunities. Enrich your life with merits. For that you have to be observant, for that you have to be always on the lookout for meritorious deeds, opportunities to perform these meritorious deeds. And if you look out for them, you will find it. Doors will always open for those who knock. So if anyone of you were thinking to yourself, well, we haven't been able to go to the monastery for a long time, we can't even do our merits now, that is not correct. It's not true. There's plenty of opportunity at home to earn merits. So why is merit so important? What did I say at the start of the sermon? Think of a meritorious deed that you did recently, one that you can recall easily, one that brings you a lot of joy when you think about it. And the thing is, right, when you do merits frequently, the same one over and over and over again, it becomes habitual. And then the chance of that meritorious deed coming forth when you try to recall goes up. This can be your insurance plan. I'd say you're practicing the path, right? You're doing all that as well. But right, everyone needs an insurance plan. Right, it's okay for you to think you're a sotapanna. Fine, okay. But you need an insurance plan. What if you're not? What if you are not who you think you are? But that meritorious deed that you have been doing habitually, chances are that'll surface at a time when you need it most. So something that you have done with joy, something you've done with great pride and with great love and affection, that will normally surface. Because at the drop of a hat, you need that to come into your mind. You don't get all the time in the world to recall the meritorious deed with which you are going to be saying goodbye. In fact, it's only one chitta viti. So what has been practiced most is what comes to mind. So you need an insurance plan. Have that insurance plan in place. And earn as many merits as you go along. Okay? So don't forget that. Now, why did I ask you to think of a meritorious deed before the start of the sermon? It is because like attracts like. Similar things attract. For you to be able to listen to this sermon attentively and to understand it, you need the power of merits. I got you thinking a moment ago. People think to themselves that it was my achievement, my hard work, my toiling and my labor that got me these results. So what is the role of merits? Was a question I asked you at the start. Do merits have nothing to play here? You know, if it's all hard work and toiling and labor, then why do we need merits? If I can become a rich man by just working hard, why do I need merits? See, this is the blinded vision that most people in this world have. They're blinded because this is mitya ditti. There is no such thing as merits or the power of merits. It is through my own hard work that I have managed to earn all these things and acquire all this wealth around me. There's nothing to do with merits. So then they think to themselves, why should I do merits? Merits never got me anywhere. Whatever's in my bank account today is not what I gave. It's what I earned for myself. It's what I gathered. It's what I piled up for myself, not what I gave away. People think to themselves, this is false thinking. This is wrong. Mitya ditti. What's worse, once they have this idea, then they pass that around. They instill this idea in other people's minds. They're the worst kind. But we need a way to be able to reconcile this, right? The first thing I want you to think about is, it's not always people who work hard who get what they want. Isn't that right? Because if you were to say that hard work will always get you the hard results, then that must be true every time. Sometimes a farmer will work all day long and all night long, right? And he'll prepare the ground, prepare the soil, he'll plant the seeds, he'll water them, he'll add the fertilizer, he'll look after his crop, keeping away the pests. And then all of a sudden, sometimes it's just an infestation of some rodent. Oh, maybe it's bad weather. Or some other kind of misfortune comes his way, and then his entire harvest is destroyed overnight. This can sometimes be enough for him to commit suicide. Because he doesn't understand how things really work. So what is the role of hard work and what is the role of merits in getting you what you want? See, most people don't talk about both these things. Most speakers you'll find will talk about hard work, right? Your attitudes and your life philosophy and your commitment, your dedication, your get-go attitude, right? Your eagerness, all of this is what gets you results. Half of the world's population will say. The other half will say it's actually merits. Right? Do good. And so on. That is what will get you your merit, your what you want. But not often will you come across a talk where you have these two things coupled. How actually you need both. And how the two work in unison. These two forces don't actually act against each other. They're complementary. They support each other. It is not enough to have merits, and it is not enough to work hard. One who becomes successful is someone who has merits and works hard. By working hard, I don't necessarily mean toiling, and right, that's not what I mean. What I mean is application. So you can think of it that way. I mean work, not necessarily work hard, but work. You need to work. You need action. You need activity. You need enterprise. Yeah, because you could have all the merits in the world and sit on your backside all day long. Nothing's going to happen. Because what action allows you to do, what activity allows you to do, is to draw on the merits that you have in your merit account. That's how you make a withdrawal, by taking action. So, you know, I'm proposing this as an answer for those who could be maybe stuck in either one of these two camps. One camp, you know, there's nothing for me to do. I just have to sit on my bottom and wait for things to happen. Then there are others who might think, well, you know, I have enough merits, so I don't need to do anything. My merits will save me. And the other will say, I don't need to do any merits. You know, I'm a hardworking man. I'll be able to get what I want. So these are the two extremes. They're both mistaken. Let me share a story with you. So the story goes, one day, a man who wanted to win the lottery. Right, so he was an avid believer in his faith. So he used to pray to God and say, God, right, please let me win the lottery. Please make me wealthy. I want to be rich. Right, make me a millionaire. I want to win the lottery. Please, God, I'm sure you'll do that for me. So he prays. So he goes to his religious place of worship, right? And he makes offerings to the God, and he's always on his knees asking and pleading to the God. So he asks once, twice, and then, you know, a few times later, he's now getting a bit frustrated. Like he's saying, come on, like, God, I mean, you know, how long have I been asking you for this? I believe in you, right? No one can shake my belief in you, my faith in you. Like, people are telling me there's no point, don't go asking God for things, work hard and then you'll earn whatever you want, but I don't believe in them, right? I believe in you, Sire, so please give me what I want. I want to win the lottery. Make me a millionaire. God, please. So now he gets desperate. He keeps on asking and nothing seems to happen. So one day he says, God, come on, give me a break. I want to win the lottery. So it says, as he says his story, the heavens open up, right? And then God's looking down at the man and God says, dude, give me a break. Go and buy a ticket. So what's the moral of that story? the good Lord is willing to give. But you need to take action. Now, if you replace God in our conversation with the power of merits, merits are ready to reap or to be reaped. They're ripe, but you need to take action. This man, he didn't go and buy the ticket. So no amount of pleading to God can make him win the lottery, because to win the lottery, you got to play the lottery. Without buying the ticket, there's no point pleading to God. So likewise, without taking action, without putting in the work, without making an effort, there's no point just relying on your merits and thinking to yourself, oh, I have merits, I'm sure everything will be fine. That's wrong thinking. Likewise, there's no point thinking, I'm doing all the work, so I don't need to think about merits, I don't need to earn any merits, that's just for losers. They're there for the God believers, right? Don't need any of that. Right? I'm a man on my own, right? I can do this. I don't believe in all this supernatural malarkey. Right? I can do this on my own, so I'll work hard and I'll get my results. That doesn't work either. We can prove this because there are people who work hard and they're still on zero. And then there are people who believe that they have lots of merit and they take no action, so they are still on zero. But one move to action can trigger a chain reaction which will in turn allow them to reap the power of their merits. So action coupled with merits is what's going to get you results. You need to take action. You need to do the things. That's why I say you have to do your 15 minutes meditation. You can't sit on your backside thinking, one day I'm going to get my samadhi. One day I'm going to be able to enter my jhanas and all that. You can't do that. You have to first do your 15 minutes. Because it is the environment that attracts the power of your merits, the blessings of your merits. You know, for you to attain Nibbana, for you to become a Sotapanna, you probably have enough merits, but you need to go looking for a Kalyanamitra. Sit down and listen to what he has to say, he or she has to say. That action you have to take. So for that you have to come to the temple. You have to visit the temple. You can't be at home with no Kalyanamitas around you and telling yourself, I'm doing all these merits, surely one day I'll become a Sotapan. You must take action. Because what action does is it creates the environment for your merits, the power of your merits, to take root. For it to bear fruit. So likewise, you know, say for instance, you might have enough merits to become a very rich man. Right? But for that to happen, you need to go through the system. Perhaps for that to happen, you need to start your own business. Until you get off your backside and go and do the things to start the business, the power of those merits will not begin to attract towards you. They'll just be stockpiled in your merit stock. Won't go rusty. It's not going to go off or anything like that. It'll just be there. Until you start to take action. So why again then did I ask you to think of a meritorious deed before the start of the sermon? Because you may have enough merits in your merit bank to, one, listen to this sermon attentively, because that requires merits. To remain alert, to remain awake, to remain conscious, to remain connected, both literally and metaphorically, you need merits. To understand these words, for you to be able to bring up examples from your life and relate them, for you to have that thinking power, that analytical power, for you to not be disturbed by your pet cat, by the phone, by the postman. All of these things require merits. To keep your attention, you need merits. And for those merits to come your way, to help you achieve your result, you need to hook into those merits. You need to tap into them. And that is why when you think of a meritorious deed, now in your mind you have created the right environment to start pulling the power, the law of attraction starts to work. Like things begin to attract towards each other. The good things, the positive things, start to be drawn towards your way, or drawn towards you. But say, for instance, before you sat down to listen to this sermon, you were upset about something or with someone. Like maybe you went into the washroom, right, to answer a quick call of nature before you came to listen to the sermon, and you realized the toilet wasn't flushed. And you went, right? Sometimes that sermon you're not going to get a lot out of. You might think, what? That one thing? Yes. Because what you don't see, folks, is behind the scenes there's an entire series of chain reactions. Because we live in a world of cause and effect. One effect is the cause of another, and that is the cause of another, and that is the cause of another, and that is the cause of another. It is like the butterfly effect. One small thing here can make an impact on a huge thing. The other side of the planet is all cause and effect. So for your mind to attract positive things, your mind has to be positive. When your mind is in a negative state, when it's feeling down, when it's feeling drawn out, when it's feeling drained out even, when it's lacking energy, when it's feeling, what's the word? Yeah, meh. At that time, positive things don't happen. Positive things, very, very difficult for them to happen. For them to manifest themselves is very difficult. Hardly anything positive will happen with that kind of mindset, because positive attracts positive. Negative attracts negative. You know, it's very simple to prove this point. If I ask you to do something, right, and you come up with one reason why you cannot do it, immediately your mind will be flooded with not just one, but 100 reasons why you can't do it. Because negative attracts negative. But if I ask you to do the same thing, and a positive thought appears in your mind as a result of perhaps the way I explained it to you, the way I presented it to you. That is why presentation matters, right? When you know a good sales speech can do a lot. The way one presents themselves, you know, these are things that they use in the world every day. They just don't understand how it all works. People have tried and tested, and through trial and error, people have worked out certain things, right? If you go well groomed and dressed in a nice suit with a smart tie, right, polished shoes, and get out of a nice, neat, fancy car, then chances are your customers, your potential customers, will sign the deal. People don't know why that works, but people have, through trial and error, found out that that works. They just don't know why, because they have never been able to tap into the philosophy that explains why that works. That's why. But you and I, we are fortunate enough to have that wisdom at our disposal. So why that works is, that image is a positive image. That's an image of success. So that image of success will then attract positive things, successful things. And chances are the customer will want to sign up, because they'll see the whole thing in a positive sight, in a positive perspective. So that's the way it works. So when you're listening to the sermon also, it's important to think of something positive, something, a meritorious deed that you would have done. And remember, whenever you do a meritorious deed, right, it is usually something that you give to someone else, right? To either one person, or to a bunch of people, or to the whole world, it may be, right? It's always something about giving. So when you give, you get. So when you think of a meritorious deed, and usually it's something, an instance of where you've given something, now your mind is ready to receive, because you have just started the receiving process. Giving kicks off the receiving process. So that is why, when in a sermon, what do you want to do most? What do you want to do best in a sermon? Give or receive? When you are listening to the sermon, you want to receive, right? So the best way, the best foot to start this on is to give. It may be that, you know, you are now sat down, you are ready to listen to the sermon. Now you don't really have an opportunity to give, because now you are here to do something else. That is why you can go back in memory and think of a time where you gave something. You don't necessarily have to give. Remember, it's not in the action. See, all things come together. And you should be able to see how the whole thing hangs together now. It is not in the action. It is in the mindset. That is why you can recall the meritorious deed and rejoice in the merit, and the same merits can be earned. You can double, treble, quadruple your merits by doing this. You can multiply your merits infinitely with each time you rejoice it. But not just as a mere recollection, but you have to recall it with a very positive mindset. Have the same feeling, have the same positivity towards it. You must be able to rejoice in it in the same way. Sometimes it may even be that you do a deed and you earn very little merit at the time of doing it, but then later on you look at it and you go, you know what, actually, I didn't even realize that this is going to be of so much help and so much use to so many people. Good Lord. Look at all these people making use of it. Good gosh, I didn't realize. Wow, what a great thing I've managed to do. And really, that's the moment you start picking up the more powerful merits. Maybe at the time of your offering, the power of your merits was very little. But now, different mindset, a different drishti, a different environment. So the power of merits have also multiplied. So that is why at the start of a sermon, if you remind yourself of a meritorious deed, which chances are 9 times out of 10 was something that you gave, someone, a bunch of people, a group of people, as I said, the whole world it might have been. Because you have given, now the mind is ready to receive. The environment is one that is ready to receive. Whenever you give, you are ready to receive. That is the only way you can prepare yourself to receive. It is by giving. Because whenever you give, you create a void, right? Now that void has to be filled. With whatever that was given, the void has to be filled. So it is filled with whatever that was given. It is like a water tank. If you open the tap and you say, for instance, you close the inlet temporarily and you open the outlet, now the tank starts to drain. So whatever the tank has given out, right, now open the inlet, what's going to happen? There's a void that needs to be filled now. Because it has given, it is now ready to receive. So the moment you open that inlet, water starts rushing in. Similarly, at the start of the sermon, if you remind yourself of something you have given, now your mind is ready to receive. Because it's a meritorious deed, it would have been something that you would have given to bring happiness into someone's life, bring joy into someone's life, take someone out of misery. So, if that is what you have given, what do you think you must receive? Something that brings you joy, something that brings you happiness, something that takes you out of misery. So you see, now you have created the environment for you to receive. Then you sit down and listen to the sermon. Now, you have created an environment in your mind to attract the power of the merits that you have done. And then they just start gushing in, one after the other. And then all of a sudden you realize you have managed to remain alert, to remain attentive, you have understood every word that was said, you have been able to relate it into your life. Things that you were never able to do before. Some people will call this magic, but really they only say that because they don't understand the workings behind it, the mechanism behind it. Once you understand the mechanism behind it, it's not called magic, it's called cause and effect. That is why I say, in the household, at home, find opportunities to engage in those meritorious deeds. Because when your parents start to see you as someone who's always so helpful, you know, they love you nevertheless, right? Whether you're helpful or not, they love you the same. It is not about love and how much they love you, their affection that I'm talking about here. But what about their blessings? What about the power of their blessings? Because the blessings that come from parents, they are untainted. Those are not blessings made to receive something in return. They don't expect reciprocation. Blessings of parents only superseded by the blessings of Aryans. So the blessing of an Arahatun Vahanse is much, much greater than the blessing of an Anagami person. The blessing of an Anagami person is much greater than the blessing of a Sakrudagami person. The blessing of a Sakrudagami person is much greater than the blessing of a Sotapanna person. The blessing of a Sotapanna person is much greater than the blessing of your parents. Now what if your parents are also Sotapannas? Yeah, they listen to the sermons. They practice the path as best they can. Now what? So you see, it's win-win all round. You can't lose out this way. That's why sometimes, folks, you know, it's not the big things you need to focus on. Sometimes the little things can do wonders. You know, we talk about dependent origination and like all this big stuff and big things, and we organize events and big meritorious events, right? Sometimes it's the little things. Sometimes little things can have an equal impact. With equal power, with equal force, they can propel you forward. But the thing is, the reason that you don't see that happen a lot is because people don't think about it. So people miss out. They just walk past by the little things. Sometimes adding a trailing. And I don't want you to be like that. I don't want you to miss out on the lives, on life's best blessings, on life's best opportunities. I don't want you to miss out on them. I want you to harness them. I want you to draw on their power. I want you to move forward. I want you to make use of even the slightest little thing that can help you. Because time is of the essence here. We don't have time to muck about, to mess about. Every ticking second is precious time, and it is merit that you have expended. So when you expend something, you had better earn something in return, you know, to replace it at least. Otherwise, next time it comes around, what have you got to spend? So that is the principle that is in effect here. Our ancestors used to do this as a habit. Whenever they were to start, they were ready to start work, they would worship, they would venerate the noble triple gem. So, really, instead of recalling a meritorious deed, they would in fact engage in a meritorious deed. Before the deed in question. Because showing respect, venerating those who deserve it, is a meritorious deed in itself. You should remember this, recall this from the book on deeds and results. And so they received the blessings. It used to be all the way right at the back, you know, going back in time, whenever it was an important event, a significant life event, people would always first go to the temple, worship the monks, the Mahasangha, and receive their blessings. Even to this day, you know, people engage in such activities. At the start of the new year, where do you find yourself? Some of you will find yourself at the temple, others at the church. Others in the mosque. Matters not. those who are deserving of worship, veneration, when you give that, then you will receive in return their blessings. And those blessings are very powerful. So that's what I'm saying. You need to take action. Action on its own is not going to get you very far. Merits on their own is not going to get you very far either. But when you have a bank of merits and you couple that with action, when the two come together, then amazing things will start to happen. Now here's the thing. How do you know how much merits you have? How do you know what sort of merits you have in your merit bank? It's not like you can walk up to the teller and make an inquiry. Right? So, you're going to have an element of faith that you would have committed merits in your journey in samsara. But, we don't rest on our laurels. So what do? We earn new merits. Assuming no merits were done in our journey in samsara, right? You can do it that way also, and you just work on earning merits. But while you're earning merits, you also take action. So you practice the path. You do your meditation. You listen to the sermons. You analyze the Dhamma in your mind. You contemplate. You apply the Dhamma into life situations. And then you, by doing that, you draw on the merit that you have acquired. If there isn't enough merits, then not much is going to happen. But as you continue to do merits along the way, then those merits will come forth. So you needn't fear. But if you're only doing one or the other, then what I'm asking you to do is reconsider. Because you may be missing out on something. You may be missing out on the action, you may be missing out on the merits. In one of these two places you may be lacking. Find that out and fill the void. Fill that gap. I said there are universal laws in action. All we need to do is to understand them, and then we can harness them, we can exploit them. We don't need to go finding them, because they have been found for us on our behalf by the great masters, who through their own labor, through their own hard work, they realize these truths, and now they have gifted them to us. All we need to do is to make use of them. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You don't have to go and discover that for yourself now. It has already been discovered. Now you just need to make use of it. So likewise, the law of attraction. Positivity attracts positivity. Negativity attracts negativity. That's the other side. That's why it's not a good idea to be among negative people. Walk away from them. I've told you this countless times in the past. Walk away from the losers. Walk away from the time wasters. Walk away from people who say you can't do it, you won't do it, it's not possible, it can't be done. Walk away from them, because you're wasting your precious time with them. You're wasting your precious life with them. Because if that negativity starts to creep into your mind, then now your mind becomes negative, and then nothing positive. Your merits will be helpless. Your merits won't be able to do anything to get you anywhere. Because you don't have the environment in your mind to attract that positive energy that is the merits. In fact, what will most likely happen is you'll start to attract negativity. In other words, the power of the demerits that you have done in samsara. All the times you went, all that. If you look at a lot of unsuccessful people, around them you see a lot of unsuccessful people. A lot of successful people have around them a lot of successful people, just like them. That is why I said once, you know, take it down, jot this down as a thing you got to do. Put it on your calendar every 6 months or so, every 3 months or so. Make a list of the 5 people you spend most of your time with and reevaluate. Are you spending the time with the right people? Are you spending time with people who are a drain on your mental energy? Kick them out of your life. Not literally. Are you not spending enough time with people who can make a positive impact into your life? Then go and find time with them. Make time with them. If you can't find half an hour, then cut out on the half an hour you spend in front of the TV and go and spend some time with them. Because what they'll do is they'll create a positive environment for you. And when your positive environment is created in your mind, now what happens is your own positive energy, it's not their positive energy, your positive energy will start to draw towards you. You'll start to attract that. In other words, that is your meritorious energy. The merit of all the deeds, all the meritorious deeds that you have done. Nothing else. I mean, this is not some supernatural, some magical power, some mystical power thing. It's no nonsense like that. This is the power of merits that you will have already done. They'll start to draw towards you. And then amazing and wonderful things will start to happen. Before you know it, you're becoming successful. Before you know it, you're moving leaps and bounds. Before you know it, you're moving mountains. These are very important things in life, folks. You know, this is part of this. These things, the things that I'm sharing with you today, should be part of your life philosophy. Everyone should have a life philosophy. Right? How I live my life. Because it's your life after all, right? Are you prepared to let the naysayers to influence your life? Are you prepared to allow the negative people to influence your life? It's your life. Don't be with them. Walk away. Sometimes it may be you have to walk away from 99%. You might feel alone. You might feel lonely. Oh, that's far better. That's far better than being with trash. As I say, you know, if you are waiting for an appointment and there's not a good book to read, don't pick up that trash of a magazine, of a newspaper, that gossip paper on the desk and start browsing the pages. Don't do that. You're better off dozing off for five minutes. Close your eyes, take a nap. Or go for a walk. Go and stand by a window and look outside and study what's going on around you. Apply the Dhamma. That's far better than picking up those rubbish magazines, those newspapers and going through them. Don't waste your time watching television. You know, I know this is difficult to do, right, because you live a life where these things are part of your life, right? So I'm saying, you know, at least when you're waiting for an appointment, you don't have to watch the television. It's not part of the requirement to go into the meeting room. You know, if I were an employer, okay, if I were an employer and I've called you for an appointment, a job interview, I will purposely put a television there And through a CCTV camera, I'll watch what you do during the 10 minutes you have to wait to see me. If you are someone who sits down and starts watching the TV, I probably won't hire you. But if you instead close your eyes and take a 10-minute nap, you'll earn more points from me than if you sit down there and start watching TV. Now you know the kind of people I like to hang around with. I don't like people walking into my life and filling my mind with negativity. You shouldn't be like that either. Because negative attracts negative, positive attracts positive. We don't have time to waste. This is our precious life. Right? So, engage in meritorious deeds. If the newspaper is all over the place, if the magazines are all over the place, one thing you could do is, you know, pile it all up neatly. Fold the pages of the newspaper properly. And then put it back on the desk. But don't read the rubbish. You're better than that. That's why it's always a good habit to carry a book with you. Something that'll add substance into your life. Something that'll add meaning to your life. You know, carry a Sudhaminisa book with you. Always read it for the 10th time, read it again. Have a sermon on your phone. Plug in your earphones and start listening to it. Rid your life of the negative people. I know that's strong, but yes, do that. Rid your life of the negative people. The Buddha said it. Nabajay papa ke mitte. Nabajay purisadami. Don't associate people who bring negativity into your life, who drain the positivity out of your life. Don't associate them. It's better to be alone. It's better to be the only man alive than to be with a million people who are a mental drain on you. So why am I saying all this? I'm saying all this because I want you to engage in as many merits as you possibly can. And I wanted to explain to you why I asked you before the start of today's sermon to remind yourself of a meritorious deed that you did recently. Now you see why it's important. I want you to engage in as many merits as you possibly can, so that next time I say those words aloud, it takes you a flash of a second to remind yourself of a meritorious deed, which you can rejoice in, which brings you joy as you think about it. You shouldn't sit there tapping your fingers wondering, meritorious deed, what did I do recently? It means there's nothing fresh, there's nothing more, there's nothing recent in your mind. It shouldn't be like that. Because remember, when the last moment comes, you're not going to get time. You can't go time. Can I have the extra time? Don't get that. Right? And by the same token, so one other thing I want to share with you, you know, as we're talking about positivity, I want to continue last week's conversation, but you know, this conversation has gone completely some other direction. That's why I don't know how these things start and where they end. It's just the way it works. We'll come back to last week's conversation maybe next week. So, as I was saying, one other thing I want to share with you as we're talking about positivity and having that right mental attitude. Right? Whenever you want to, whenever you're with someone, it is in your best interest to always keep them in a positive mood. It is in your interest and it is also in their interest. Let me explain to you first why it is in your interest. Remember, like attracts like. That is a universal principle. It is called the law of attraction. You can challenge it, but nothing's going to happen. It is the way it is. Excuse me. It's the way the universe operates. It is in line with what you give is what you get. It is in line with the principle of cause and effect. The whole thing is one at the end of the day. It's cause and effect. Right? So, it is in your interest to keep the people around you in a positive mood. Why is it in your interest? Because it may be through them that you attract the power of your merits, or the vipakas of your merits, the results of your meritorious deeds. You will be able to attract through them. Say, for instance, you're hungry. Okay? You're with a bunch of people who don't like you. Because you don't care about them at all, and they don't like you. You don't invest time in them, into their lives, you don't talk to them positively, you don't speak well of them, right? You sort of keep your distance from them, and you just don't care about them much, so they don't care much about you either. Now you're hungry, and they have food. Why would they give some of that to you? Why? Because they don't like you? Isn't that why they won't be interested in giving you or sharing some of that food with you? Now, see, this is a very important point because I want you to understand that merits alone cannot do everything. You need to create an environment through which to attract the results of those merits. Now, it may be that you have done a demeritorious deed and a meritorious deed in the past. The demeritorious deed was to not give, given the opportunity, not give something you had to a stranger. Okay, so for instance, let's say someone was about to eat and have a meal, and then you took it away from them. So you because of you, they had to go hungry. That was a willful action. Okay, so that's a demeritorious deed. Whereas on the other hand, you also did a meritorious deed where someone was hungry and you offered them something to eat. So that's a meritorious deed. Now you have both of these events, both of these deeds were committed. And they each have their own potential to bear fruit. So which one comes forward? What do you think? Is it the meritorious deed or is it the unmeritorious deed? When you're hungry, which one comes forward? The answer is, it's not as simple as that. The answer is, whatever the environment is in the present moment that is complementary to the said deed, that is the result, that is the power of the deed that will be drawn towards you. So, now think to yourself then, if the people around you are not so happy with you, they don't like you very much, then which one of those two deeds do you think is going to now bear fruit? The meritorious deed of giving someone a meal, or the unmeritorious deed which was taken away someone's meal or someone's opportunity to have a meal and therefore leaving them hungry? I think you can work out the math. See, this is all very logical, is it not? There's a voice in the back of my mind going, duh, it's the Buddha Dhamma. I just shared that with you. It's the Buddha's teaching. Like, duh. It has to make sense. He's the perfect one. He's the omniscient one. He knows it all. There's no guesswork with him. It's pitch perfect. To the letter. He's precise, he's accurate, he's perfect. Always perfect. He's the perfect one. So that's how that works. Whereas if the people around you, you know, that's why when you're at home, when you're with your mother, for instance, you know, you will hardly ever go hungry. That is not because you have never taken away someone's meal. It is because when you're with your mother, because she has always positive thoughts towards you, the environment is ripe for your meritorious deeds to bear fruit. Because your mother will always have thoughts of metta, karuna, mudita towards you. In a worldly sense at least. Now that should explain why it's always best to be among Aryans. To always have a bunch of sotapannas or sakrudagamis, anagamis. To be among arahatunvahanses. Because their minds are magnets of your meritorious power. Through them, will attract towards you the power of merits that you have committed in sansara. Hardly ever will an unmeritorious deed that you have committed will come to you through an Aryan. To an arahatunvahanse, never. From an anagami person down, we've got to say next to none. To an arahatunvahanse, never. So, until you find yourself in the midst of an arahatunvahanse, or everyone at home is an arahatunvahanse, it's best to keep them happy. So it's not a good idea to come and vent off your frustrations at work, at the workplace, with your wife in a negative way. You know, it's okay to ask for help and say, "Hey, honey, I've had a tough, long day today. Can I share some of my troubles with you? Would that be okay? Do you have 10 minutes? Can I just talk to you for a sec?" That's fine. But venting your anger on her, you've had a bad day at work, right? So what happened at work? Demeritorious deeds, they bore fruit. Now you come home and you ruin the peace at home, and you take your frustration over your wife, you shout at her, you yell at her, you complain about why there's not enough sugar in the tea, right? And now she's not happy either. You ruined her mood. Expecting her to do good to you, when you have ruined her mood, ain't gonna work. Because now you have just completely destroyed the environment to draw the power of merits that you have done yourself. Because you can't reap the merits that your wife has done. It doesn't work like that. It's only your merits, but you need the environment for that. And through action, you can create that environment. So talking to your wife nicely, talking to her in a loving way, in an endearing way, now that might just draw enough merits to help you recover from that sad state of affairs that you had at the workplace. Maybe sometimes she'll come and give you a hug. But not if you shout at her. Why would she come and give you a hug? She'll just frown at you and walk away. And she might even ask herself, why did I marry this man? You can't expect anything positive from her from that point forward. So you see, you're ruining the whole thing for yourself. That's why I'm teaching you these things. I'm showing you how the world works, how life works. This is how life works. When you understand how life works, you'll understand how your wife works. You heard the expression, right? Environment is everything. What you reap is what you sow. So it's a bad idea, it's a terrible idea to take out your anger, your frustrations, your annoyances at the workplace, at home, because you're just making it even more difficult for you. Why would you do that? Anyone in their sane mind won't do that, but you know, hey, it's insane people who do that because they have never listened to these things. They have never had the association of, they have never had noble companionship. They have never had the opportunity to associate the Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha. No wonder. That's why we always say, look at the positive in others. Look at their good virtues. Seek their good virtues. Because what happens then? I remember, you know, a while back, you know, a series of sermons, in quite a number, in the Sinhala sermons, Guru Swami Nuhanse and myself and other of my fellow monks included, we talked to you about always try and see the positive in people. Why is that? It's because when you see the positive in them, then positive, you will be positive. Because when you see negative and you start to ponder and you start to think about, you start to contemplate on the negative, then your mind slowly becomes negative. Because like attracts like. But when you see the, when you sometimes you'll have to look long and hard to find the positive. But if you do that, and you find that positive and you talk about it, the more you talk, the more positive you become. It starts small, but it grows. To grow, you have to fertilize it. You have to work at it. It's like practicing anything. You know, to learn the to play the violin, you start at small. And then you practiced. And practice makes perfect. So likewise, when you start to see some, sometimes you'll have to look long and hard, you'll have to fish for it. To find one positive, and you find that positive, right? And then it helps you to heal your mind immediately. But here's what else happens. When someone is really upset about something, and they're taking it out on you, if you're able to spot at least the tiniest thing that is positive about them, and you raise that in the conversation you're having with them. Now you're helping heal them. Because why are they upset in the first place? They don't like you. Or something you've done they disapprove of. That is why they are in this fit of rage or anger or whatever. Right? But if you find something positive about them and you mention that in the conversation, right, I really like this about you, or something like that, right? There's no retaliation to that. They can't come back on that, because you just said something positive about them. And so when they realize that, when you highlight, when you point out, when you emphasize something positive in their mind, now that positivity starts to attract more positivity. And then their minds start to turn to positive. And when their minds start to turn to positive, what you'll notice is they'll stop shouting at you, and now they'll start speaking positively about you. Because the shouts that were coming towards you, your way, were the demerits that you have done on your own in the past. It's not because the person standing in front of you is a bad person. They're shouting at you because you would have shouted someone else in the past. It's tit for tat, right? But now, when you talk positive, now what you're doing is you're changing the environment. It's like flipping the channel on a television set. When you change the channel, then you're tuned into a different channel. Imagine your remote control had a fade effect between channels. As you go from channel 1 to channel 2, channel 1 slowly fades away and then channel 2 fades in. Right? So like something like that happens. The moment you change that channel with the other person by talking about something that is positive about them, then that negativity slowly starts to disappear, and in its place you find positivity. And now, with that positive mindset, they're going to talk to you in a positive way. In other words, your merits start to attract, and now they start talking good things about you. Nahi verena verani. You can't answer anger with anger. It doesn't work. Because what happens if you do that? Someone's negative already towards you, and then you induce more negativity. Now what's going to happen? Now their mind is going to rot. With a rotten mind, that's never going to attract anything that is positive your way. You see, isn't this what people should be taught before they get into a marriage? Because people think, you know, when they, as a couple, right, people get married and then one says something and the other responds to that in a harsh word, and then the comeback is even harsher, right? Then what happens? Now you have tennis. Right? Verbal tennis, defamation and criticisms. You know, I knew you'd say that anyway because you're ugly. Even things that are completely unrelated, they start propping up. And now what happens? Now the situation worsens. Isn't this what family counseling should be about? Isn't this what people should be taught in schools? Isn't this what people should be taught before they get married? But do they? Isn't this the stuff that should go on books into people's homes? Isn't this what should be given to someone as a wedding gift, a book to read? No, but what do people give them? On wedding day, they'll give them a book that says, Man's Guide to a Three-Letter Word. How to have the best three-letter word in your life. But how do two people live with each other? No one cares to show them because no one knows. This is how life works. So that is why it's so important to foster a positive environment around you and in the minds of others. Always try and be positive towards others. Excuse me. And as I said, there are two reasons. One reason is because it's in your interest. Because you don't want to draw negative or the results of the bad karmas you've done towards you. Because that's only going to bring you pain and suffering. So why would you want that, right? Excuse me. And the second reason is because you don't want them to fall into trouble. Secondly, let me put it this way. Even an Arahatun Mahanse will do whatever is in his power to remain positive to people around him. Why do you think that is? Because if the people around him are non-arahants, let's say a prutakjana, a mundane person, then an arahant, although having become an arahant, does no unmeritorious deeds, before he became an arahant, he would have committed unmeritorious deeds. Perhaps in previous lives, countless. Now, if the person in front of him is in a negative mindset, now through him, the arahant has created an environment to attract the bad vipaka of the bad karma that he has done. But not realizing this, that person in front of him starts to inflict those vipaka on the Arahatun Mahanse. What happens then? So let's say the Arahatun Mahanse, before becoming an Arahatun Mahanse in a previous life, shouted at someone and maybe spilt through some paint or something dirty at that person. And now that vipaka is ripe and ready to bear fruit. So now the Arahatun Mahanse does not manage to keep the mind of the person in front of him positive. What's going to happen is that vipaka is going to come through him to the Arahatun Mahanse. What's going to happen to that person? It may be when the Arahatun Mahanse committed this deed, he wasn't an Arahatun Mahanse. But, the way deeds and results work, it does not matter whether you're an Arahatun Mahanse or the Budrajanan Mahanse. If there's a bad deed and the environment is right for that to bear fruit, then it will bear fruit. Then the poor soul that stood in front of that Arahatun Mahanse, has to answer to that. And now that vipaka goes through him and is inflicted towards the Arahatun Mahanse, and now that poor person commits the deed. Now who's got to bear the fruit of that? So this is why. Two main reasons why you have to keep the people around you positive. And why you got to walk away from the negative people. If you can't change them, if you can't influence them, if you can't bring them to a positive attitude, just walk away. In a mundane sense and in a supramundane sense, both aspects of this, it makes little sense. In fact, it is detrimental to one's well-being and happiness, to surround yourself with people with a negative mindset, a negative mentality. People who are always hung down, people who are always miserable. If you can't change them, walk away from them. It's better to be alone. See, that's how life works. So, a few important lessons we've learned today, haven't we? Always have enough merits in your merit bank account. So at the beck and call, you can recall one instantly. And do them frequently. As I said, at home, take up a few chores Take up a few, pick up a few responsibilities. Help out your parents particularly. Sometimes you may not realize how many meritorious deeds are just there for the taking. Don't pass them by. Don't be someone who walks past an opportunity, a meritorious opportunity, and complain, why haven't someone done this? Why don't they switch off the fans? Why can't they switch off the light when they walk out of the room? Why all these flowers? You know, it's all this old flowers. Why can't they just clean the altar and keep it ready for me to come and put the clean flowers, the new flowers, the fresh flowers? Why can't they close the tap when they open it? Why can't they flush the toilet? Why can't they empty the bucket? These are the complainers. Don't be like that. Because you see, when you start to complain, now again, negative mentality in your mind. So the next thing you're about to do, you've just ruined your mind. You've allowed this event to ruin your mind. Remember, it's not the event that decides the outcome. It's the response to the event that determines the outcome. That is where your action is important. There's the event, there's the response to the event. There's another factor that you cannot see. This is the invisible factor. A bunch of meritorious power and a bunch of unmeritorious power. Which one is drawn depends on what action you take, your response. And together that determines the outcome. So have faith in your merits and take the right action. And alongside that, engage in as many meritorious deeds as you possibly can. Whenever you're about to do something positive, something energetic, something new, something refreshing, a new enterprise, right? Always think of something, a meritorious deed that you've done recently. Something that you're really joyful about, something that you really rejoice in. Something you feel high-spirited about. And then that will create the environment in your mind to 9 times out of 10 make the next thing you're about to do, if it's a positive thing, successful. And that's not because you made it successful. It's because there were the right causes for the successful event effect to take place. At the end of the day, it's all cause and effect. So I did it, it's all my doing and all that. Right? Once you understand the world as it really is, as you understand life as it really works, right, you begin to realize that's not quite how all things hang together. It is all cause and effect. In one sense you could say it's all my doing, yes, it's all your doing, not just in this birth though. What about the things you cannot see that were done before? And the thing is, you cannot determine when and in which quantities, at what time, those things will start to bear fruit. That is not in your control. It is in nobody's control. It's not like there's a supernatural power somewhere that controls all this. It's not like that. It is the causes that determine which effect is going to manifest. It is the environment. That is why environment is everything. So the next thing we learned is always try and maintain a positive mindset. And keep the people around you positive as much as you possibly can. Walk away from the negative people. If you can't change them, walk away from them. Don't surround yourself with negative people. It is not fruitful. It's a drain on your energy. It's a waste of your life. They're not getting anything out of you. You're not getting anything out of them. So there's no point in maintaining and nourishing that relationship. Break it. Sever it. Walk away. The people who are around you, or the people you've got to be around, sometimes it's like that, as much as you possibly can, keep them positive. Keep them positively charged. So that's why talk good things about them. Always talk positive things at home. Don't spend too much time talking about negative stuff. Talk about the positive things at home. You know, when you're from the workplace, when you get back home, don't spend time talking to your wife and to your children, or your wife talking to your husband and your children about all the negative things that happen in the workplace. Talk about the positive things that happen in the workplace. Talk about what you saw as you walked along the street and you saw that a man help another poor person. Talk about those things. Talk about how everyone in the workplace was so supportive and helped you to complete that project. If you must talk negative things, then do it in a safe environment, maybe with someone who can help you. But don't go wholesale, especially not with your children. They don't need that. You need to try and maintain a positive mindset with them, so that they can constantly keep drawing on the positive energy. And then positive attracts more positive, and then they're inclined to do more positive, and then that way, through positivity, they keep moving forward. Nibbana works in the same way, folks. No different. You need to have a joyful mind for Nibbana to instill itself in your mind. If you're all hung down and very negative and very, very energy drained and very feeling meh about everything, you know, Nibbana is no, your home is no Nibbana, your mind is no home for Nibbana. So bear in mind to do that also. Okay? So think about those things. Right? A lot of practical things we've discussed today and learned today about really how to take a more positive approach to life and how you can make things happen for you. Yeah, these are the laws that govern the universe. Once you understand them, you just need to make use of them. Just exploit them as you wish. You don't have to pay any royalties for this. This is yours, right? Do as you wish with this. Exploit it to the fullest. And go and reach anything and everything you want. All the good things that you want, you hoped for, all the good things you wanted to reach, all the good things you wanted to achieve, go and do it. But this is the way to do it. Particularly Nibbana. Because when you consider all good things, all positive things, what is supreme among them? Of course, it is Nibbana. There's nothing that is better than Nibbana. Nibbana is best. So particularly with Nibbana, have a positive mental attitude. Aniccha is all about positivity. It's not about being gloomy and miserable. One who understands Aniccha, one who understands Dukkha, one who understands Anatta, their mind is buzzing with positive energy. Their mind is oozing with joy. When was the last time you saw an arahant pulling a long face? Doesn't work like that. So, a lot of pragmatic decisions to be made there, a lot of practical choices to be made there, a lot of things to do to make some sometimes big, sometimes minor changes in your life. Now, I don't like the next few words I have to say, but I have to say it nevertheless. Because this was a very practical sermon, 99% of people will just ignore it. 1% will follow it. And I can't change that. There is nothing I can do to change that. It is the way it is. You know, so much so, and I'm sure you won't mind me sharing this with you, right? In some sermons, because people tell me about, you know, how many people it has gone out to, and sometimes sometimes people come and share with me this interesting fact they find out, okay? In some sermons, you realize they are very practical. We talk about very most practical of things, right, about things you have to do, right, like love your wife and respect your elders and, you know, say sorry and go and ask for forgiveness and, right, make a list and walk around the block, right, go walk around the house and find out things you can do. All these practical things, right, packed into a sermon. You have some sermons that are like that. And then there are other sermons that are very profound and deep and very difficult to comprehend, right? And big words, like bulldozer words, right? And you have things like that in that sermon. Which of these two types of sermon do you think gets the most views? You'd be surprised. Because, you know, we have a team of people who, you know, share this out on the internet, and, you know, they make sure that our listeners get to listen to the sermons and all that. And you know, I get some interesting insights from time to time. Usually, the sermons which are deep and profound, and, you know, they contain the deep Dhamma concepts, right? They get about 10 times as many views as the sermons that talk about practical things that people need to do to attain Nibbana. What a pity. What a pity. Is it no wonder then that the Buddha said, Appakate manusesu, ye janaparagamin, because there are more portillas around than there are people who actually want to practice the path and attain results. That is why Guru Swamin Mahanse goes on and on and on about this. Always he says, Nibbana is a practice. It is not about how much you know. It is about how much you do. But people don't like the practical stuff. Most people like knowledge. The things they know, not the things they have to do. Because that's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult. You got to do stuff. You got to lift. You got to get yourself off the chair. You got to lift yourself up. You know, you got to go and talk to someone. You got to say sorry. You got to write a letter. You got to write a thank you note. Can't be bothered. And besides, when you give a good talk, right, then people give you a lot of praise. Because today, in today's society, more value is given to knowledge than to practice, than to virtue, than to how much a person has changed inside. More value is given to how much they know. That is why in a society where everything is knowledge based, you know, we have supercomputers. No wonder. And information technology is growing at a rapid rate like never before, because information seems to be the most important thing. It has become the lifeblood of today's society. Didn't used to be the case. It is what people's hearts were made of that mattered. Today, more value is given, more emphasis is given to the brain size than heart size. Hey ho, nothing I can do, nothing I can say will change that. Because if it were able to be changed, then before me, 2,500 years before me, someone else would have changed it. And they couldn't. He couldn't. What he couldn't, how can I? What my teachers can't, what, how can I? You don't be like that, is what I'm asking you. be a practical person, because it is practicality. Nibbana is a practical thing. It is what you do that gets you results, not what you know, not how much you know. So this sermon is packed with practical stuff, and therefore I know it's not going to appeal to everyone. All I can say is, what a pity. If you ask me, this is one of the better sermons. Hey, at least I'll blow my own trumpet. So I want you all to think about that, right? Because I want you all to lead positive lives. I want you to get the most out of your living life and make your this life and your next life successful, and hopefully do not have a next life. And you can all do that if you take a practical approach to things. So do it. Okay? Right then, on that note, we will conclude today's sermon. Let us take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired. By chanting Pirith and engaging in various meritorious deeds that we have throughout the day, listening to the Dhamma, preaching the Dhamma, in making offerings to the Noble Triple Gem, may the merits that we have all acquired be transferred to the Bhikkhu Bhikkhunis Upasaka Upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the Buddha's teaching and passed it down in the form of Tripitaka, down through the noble lineage, and have made it available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to do transformation to the Bhikkhu Bhikkhunis Upasaka Upasikas throughout the world, wherever they may be, who have dedicated their lives to practicing the path, as well as the Mahanayaka Anunayaka Swami Mahanses, and everyone who is committed to protecting and preserving the Sambuddha Shasane. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Swami Nuhansi and all the other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and the Anagarikas, and the Upasaka Upasikas, as well as the devotees of the monastery, friends of the monastery, who in the name of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha by offering alms, shelter, robes and medicines, and engage on this path to Nibbana and to fulfill the path. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, made to the power of these merits. They abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas, Brahma, spirits, demons, and the dead, particularly the Sakkadeva, as well as all the other gods, numerous gods and deities, and also our guardian deities who always keep a watchful eye over us to protect us and to keep us out of harm's way. May to the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path. May they continue to long preserve the Sambuddha Shasane and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our parents, to our husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, as well as our teachers, who have always been by our side to guide us, to protect us, to show us the path, and who have always been throughout our lives there to help and protect us and guide us. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. And may through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to those who have predeceased us, our ancestors, as well as those who we may have offended and insulted and desecrated. Today they may be seeking an opportunity to cause harm to our lives and put obstacles on our path to Nibbana. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, and may the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. And may to the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who have made great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha and to pass it around the world through the form of the the sermons, as well as in transliterating these sermons and making it available to others, as well as inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, as well as to people who have committed themselves to protecting our nation, to lead our nation, and to safeguarding our nation, as well as those people who are in the health services, as well as the armed forces, who are protecting, who have committed themselves to protect the nation and its people, and have committed themselves towards that cause, particularly in this recent pandemic. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. May to the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may to the power of all the blessings and all the merits that we have acquired today, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahat Unvahanses in this blessed land. And may to the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who's helped make this event a success, be able to become an Arahat Unvahanse and Arahat Mehen Unvahanse in this life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. On that note, we will conclude today's sermon. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all forever.